Hello, thanks for tuning in. My name's Jamie. I use he/him pronouns, and you're listening to the Proper Full On Gay Podcast, that show where we talk about Heartstopper and use it to spark conversations about the lives of queer young people today. We're so excited to be kicking off our season two series. We'll be deep diving each episode in turn between now and around the end of November, with episodes dropping every 2 weeks. Joining me today, I've got Molly and Liam from an incredible organization from the Proud Trust, and we're going to be talking all about our favorite moments in season two, episode one, out. Hello, Molly and Liam.
Hello.
Hello.
It's so serendipitous that you're here because you two finished episode eight in season one with us. You were the last two guests in our season one deep dive. You did episode eight last year.
Was so good.
I know, it was such a good
Like a seamless
episode.
transition.
Oh, I know. Oh, apart from like the 10 other episodes that we squeezed in between season one and season two. If you've got time, listeners, feel free to go back and listen to all those episodes if you'd like to. Molly, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Proud Trust for people who maybe haven't listened before?
Yeah, of course. So the Proud Trust is an LGBT plus youth organisation that empowers young people to be proud of who they are. And we do that through a range of services, both locally based in Greater Manchester through youth groups and training within schools and education, as well as national services such as Proud Connections live chat and our wider schools and training programmes as well.
Very good. And Liam, you manage the youth groups, if I remembered that right.
You have indeed. I do manage the youth group, so all of our spaces for our young people to access and come together is what I look after across Greater Manchester and beyond.
And do you have many youth groups?
We have a significant number of youth groups. At last count, there was 14, and then some
No
more.
way.
Yeah, and we've got some more being created to fulfill needs that are currently not being fulfilled by the services we've got. So we're constantly looking to adapt to make sure that they're getting the best support they can by
What
us.
kind of stuff happens at your youth groups?
Oh, great question. So there's loads of different things depending on the youth group and the needs of those young people attending. So one of our youth groups did a project around like going to the theatre and understanding a show and what that means and why. Shows are really important to understand learning. So they looked at like drugs and alcohol, sexual health, other big topics that they might not get a real insight into in education in a traditional sense, right through to just like coming and decorating a tote bag and just having a chat with some friends, and everything in between the two of those sort of happens in our youth groups.
Very good. Very good. Well, as I said a second or two ago, you're listening to the Proper Full On Gay Podcast. Coming up between now and the end of the year, we're going to be deep diving each episode, one through eight, right up. It's going to take us right up until around the end of November, we think. We'll be releasing episodes every 2 weeks, and we'll be putting together our top 10 moments from each episode, because that worked so well in our bonus episode, which we released a couple of weeks ago, where we picked the top 10 moments of the entire of season two. That is a great episode. If you haven't listened to it, head back and have a listen to that. It was so much fun to record with Emma Arnelli, a therapist from California. She's so insightful. It was a great episode. So head back and have a listen if you haven't done already. Share your thoughts and let us know what you think. Get in touch via our Instagram page, which is at Proper Full On Gay Podcast, or you can pop us an email to properfullongaypodcast@gmail.com. We'd really, really love to hear from you. And we've picked up so many listeners in the past couple of weeks. We've had so many new listeners. So if you haven't subscribed already, make sure you look down at your phone right now and hit that subscribe button. It takes 2 seconds, doesn't cost anything, and it makes a huge difference to helping other Heartstopper super fans find the show. Should we get started with episode one?
Yes,
Yes.
let's.
What were your general thoughts about episode one?
I loved it. I think my kind of going into the second season, I was almost had that like just slight anticipation of are they going to be able to recreate and recapture the just utter magic that was that first season, the kind of queer joy, the perfection, that like perfect balance. But also a bit apprehensive because this season is slightly darker than the
That's
previous seasons.
right.
It addresses some kind of slightly darker topics. But I think after episode one, I kind of knew that they had once again struck lightning and had managed to perfectly encapture everything that was so warm and wholesome about season one
That's
without
it.
shying away from those darker topics as well.
Yeah, they've got this really great way of like always making sure that there's so much hope involved in those scenes where it does get a bit heavy and a bit emotional. There's always so much hope at the end. You know, that's one of the great things about Heartstopper. I think as season one opens, we join Charlie and Nick exchanging text messages with one another as they get ready for school. It's so cute that we get these real intimate moments with Nick and Charlie, isn't it? Like we get an insight into like their personal and private conversations online.
Yeah, and that's something that I think the show is like is so cute that it includes that and feels really authentic. The fact that they're not texting, they're messaging on Instagram because that is where young people communicate. They don't text, they don't use Facebook Messenger. It's they use Instagram or they use Snapchat. And like the fact that the show chose to kind of accurately represent that and talk how young people talk. But the fact that they also publish the pages. So like Nick's Instagram is a public Instagram and Charlie's Instagram is a public Instagram. And the way they set that up with like, you know, having Tao comment on Charlie's Instagram and they can go on and feel like they're part of that by just like scrolling through Nick's photo feed. Obviously very different to showing through like Kit Connor's photo feed.
Definitely. And that's a nice little Easter egg for people who hadn't realized that you can actually access their Instagram feeds.
There you go. 100% that moment of them messaging and how engrossed they are in it. Charlie being there eating his cereal while still sending a message with one hand. That is so young people. It's unreal.
Definitely. And I'm sure it's well paid for. Like, I'm sure Instagram pays for that exposure. I'm such a cynic. And speaking of like expertly placed products, we see as we join Charlie and Tori as they travel to school together and we get like a really shameless product placement for a nameless juice. I'm not going to name the juice that she's drinking, but held up perfectly framed as they travel to school. Whenever they get to school, Nick is really excited to tell Charlie about how he has come out to his mum. So let's have a listen to that conversation.
Guess what?
What?
I came out to my mum last night.
Oh my God, how did it go?
Really well, she was completely fine with it.
Want a well done kiss?
Yeah.
Coming out to mum or dad or your parent or your caregiver is such a big milestone, isn't it, for queer people? It's really nice to hear them share in this moment together.
Yeah. And I think it's such a nice thing that it also kind of reminds us that we are picking up exactly where we left off. The fact that he says, I came out to my mum last night.
That's right.
Kind of reminding the audiences that like this is a seamless straight through story. No time has passed. But I think for a lot of young people, that is usually the first coming out is that kind of that it's either their closest friends or their parents. And that is what feels like the big step out and everything else is then kind of comes from that point. So for Nick to show that a kind of elation about coming out to his mum and how well it's gone, again, it really nicely mirrors that kind of we've had the texting montage, the meeting at school, and then the conversation. When you look at how those three steps went between Charlie and Ben, completely contrasted to how the exact same three things happen but with Nick as well.
Definitely.
I think it's a really nice job of what they do with it.
Definitely. And Nick was gifted this really beautiful coming out experience with his mum. But what really struck me is whenever he's talking about it with Charlie, he says, oh, it's great. She was fine with it. You know, as if that's like kind of made me feel a wee bit sad because that's the really positive outcome is that your parent was fine with it. You know, for queer people, it's so true that that's you just want to be accepted, you know, and it kind of made me think about how coming out doesn't always go that way.
Yeah, 100%. And I think what Heartstopper gifted lots of young people was a way to make that coming out period of time a little bit easier. And we touched on it in previous episodes about how young people used that episode with Nick and Mum to spark their own coming out conversations with people at home or their friends and stuff. So it's quite nice that during this entire season, we see the roller coaster that coming out truly is, because that moment was so beautiful that people can be like, that's not how it goes. And sometimes it is, but we get to see the whole host of coming out experiences during Nick's storytelling this season. So it's quite a nice follow on from that for young people to have something else to tune into and go, it's not always going to be perfect, but that's okay.
Yeah, yeah. And also just to know sometimes the perfect experience can exist and can happen. It's reassuring in a way because it gives people a bit more confidence in having the conversation. Even if it isn't perfect, you know, it still gives them a bit more confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, if we look at kind of the way coming out has been shown in TV shows and films, we tend not to see those positive coming out stories because they're not as high drama, they're not as interesting to watch. So media's tend to go down that kind of slightly more dramatic negative route, which is the case, unfortunately, for some people. But a lot of people have that really positive experience. But because of what they've grown up seeing in media, they perceive that it's going to be really negative. And that's what they almost go into that thinking. And I think that's one thing that the show does really well is that it shows Nick's first coming out as really positive, but it's just his first coming out. It's not that Nick is then out, which I think is what a lot of places and a lot of shows and TV things will show, that like the character comes out to someone and that's it, that you're out. And that is sometimes kind of unauthentically shows the queer experience, and actually you are consistently coming out, and our young people have such a journey to go out of they're just starting it by coming out to that first person. And I think that's one thing the show does really well, as we see Nick come out so many times through actively coming out to people, but also the amount of times that Nick has to kind of passively aggressively remind people that he's bisexual. I think Netflix did a really great compilation of how many times he says, "I'm bisexual, actually." And that is such a kind of authentic representation of the bi experience, of people being like, "Oh, I thought you were straight, I'm bi actually. Okay. I thought you were gay, I'm bi actually." And that showing that kind of ongoing like process of coming out in those big moments, but also the kind of experience of having to come out every day.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. The scene ends with a really cheeky kiss in the storeroom, and we get a whole montage then of Nick and Charlie just displaying their closeness as a couple and how comfortable and confident they are with each other, which was actually a real treat at the start of the season. Like, it was a really positive and uplifting way to start the show. Yeah, so that was our first pick. The next pick is whenever Charlie is walking to school with Isaac and Tao, he tells them that Nick is ready to come out, and both of them are a little bit concerned. Let's have a listen.
"As long as you're both fine with it and you're looking out for each other, I'm sure it will be fine."
"Tao Su, are you giving Charlie relationship advice?"
Rude!
"I know lots about relationships. I watch a lot of romance movies, so..." Excuse me.
"You're excused."
"No, excuse me. You have it."
"No, you won. Fair and square."
"No, take it."
"No. Tao!"
That scene was a real treat. I thought it was so funny. Tao actually runs out of the shop at the end of that scene. Like, he turns and he runs out of the shop. It's hilarious. He is really confused. He's totally getting into his own head about how he feels about Elle. It's just a perfect encapsulation of how he must be feeling at the minute.
I love that this scene happened in a corner shop.
So I think,
that was the first thing that we were like, of course they're in a corner shop, because what else do you do on your way to school but go by the by the corner shop?
Yeah.
It was something that it really reminded me of, walking to school and walking to school with my friends and stopping by the shop on the way and spending the money you were supposed to spend on your dinner on chocolate or whatever you were bought. And it just again was like, it reinforced how authentic this felt like 15, 16 year olds rather than kind of anyone older.
Definitely, definitely. And what a classically teenage way to respond whenever you got a crush on your friend and you get into like a little situation that you just run away. You just want the world to swallow you up. You know, it's so funny.
100%. Like, that little skip out of the store being like, "I don't want to do this right now. I have no idea what I'm going to say, so bye." And it was like, just before that, like the dramatic like fuddling with the juice and then being like, "You have it," being like, "No." Nope. And it was just being like, "No, this is our ritual, you won, it's fine. And it being like, I don't want to win. I want you to have it.
Yeah,
I just
for sure.
leaving is so teenage, it's untrue.
For sure. And the fact that it was over their apple juice, like, because at the start of season one, Tao kept buying Elle's apple juice after she moved to the other school. You know, it's lovely how the kind of the continuity flows through and stuff like that too. Do you think that Tao and Isaac are right to be a little bit concerned for Nick and Charlie in this new stage of their coming out journey as a couple?
Yes. And I think it's definitely tied into how protective Tao is. And so it
Yeah,
does it
for
in a really
sure.
subtle way, as we've seen in the season so far. It's very subtle in that sort of concern. But Tao's always been very heart on the sleeve. I want to make sure you're all right, super protective.
Yeah.
And I think it goes back to that experience that Charlie had in that in the first year, and that sort of this was a really horrible experience for you, Charlie. How's this going to be for someone else that, while he doesn't want to admit it massively, he actually cares for and is definitely grows to care for more this season.
Yes.
So he's starting to be in that bubble of Tao's protectiveness is Nick. But then it's like, how does this going to impact my friend Charlie that I really care about? Again, is it going to be as horrible as it was last time, just to two people, or is it going to be completely different? Has the world changed a little bit? Have we got past that? Because that's just an area they're not sure about. It's just on an unknown, and teenagers don't
Definitely.
like it. So.
Definitely.
I also think we it's so nice that we see that side of Tao and how well Tao knows Charlie. He knows that when Charlie likes someone, he runs head first with his heart in his sleeve and is
Yeah.
so willing to just give his heart to this person that cares about him, as he did with Ben.
That's
That
right.
I think we kind of it's because we see so much of Nick and Charlie's relationship, we kind of it reminded me that like Tao doesn't really know Nick very well, other than Nick Nelson, the straight rugby lad. Like he knows he's not, and he knows when he's with Charlie. But I think they still are always going to have that apprehensive of like, this is the lad who happily let people pick on us and like who stood by whilst his friends picked on us. They have that like concern, but they also don't shut Charlie down. They don't say like, this is going to end terribly. Like he takes such a kind of emotionally mature of like, you can make your own decisions, and if they turn out to be dumb decisions, that's on you. But just, you know, heed with caution. And I think it's the one of the many moments that we see Tao be such a great best friend to Charlie.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And Tao goes on quite a journey this season. You know, Nick and Charlie, sorry, Nick and Tao's relationship in particular is just a joy to watch as they grow a lot closer and they start to really open up and show vulnerability with each other. You know, it's really nice. It's a really nice relationship to watch. The next moment that I picked out was Imogen's new dog. Imogen has a new dog. How exciting. The next day, Nick arrives at school. I think it's a couple of days later, maybe. And Imogen and Ben are sitting at the usual picnic bench where all of Nick and his friends hang out. She's really excited to see Nick, and they sit on the grass together so that she can show him photographs of Brooklyn, named after the place that she wants to visit. Let's have a listen to their conversation.
Imogen, you okay?
I have something very important to show you.
Okay.
I named him Brickman because that's where I want to live someday, and I really want him to meet Nelly so they can be best friends.
He's absolutely adorable.
We're still friends, aren't we? I promise I don't fancy you anymore.
Yeah, I still want to be friends.
Okay, good. Also, fancy someone else now.
Really? Who? Okay, fine. Don't tell me.
We've been friends since year seven, but.
If anything actually happens, I promise I'll tell you. And if you have any romantic developments, I want to hear all about them. Oh my God, I forgot to show you this one. Look, I got Brooklyn to roll over.
What a legend. I love Imogen so much in this moment. She is so good, so good.
I just love Imogen overall. Kind of, I came out of season one being like, she has got potential to be one of my favorite characters.
Yeah.
And I think after having watched this season, I think she is my favorite character. I think she's she's so good. She's yeah. like she's really emotionally mature. And
isn't
like
she?
It's something that I thought kind of very much through the first season, but like I think she has these aspirations and she has the fact that she knows she wants to go and live in Brooklyn in New York and yeah, go off yeah. and live her fashionable life. And I love that she has this connection to Nick and she values their friendship. That she doesn't want to let her crush on him from earlier in the season kind of affect that. And she kind of makes yeah. the effort to reassure and to check in and say like, we're good. Like, I know it was a bit uncomfy, but are we good?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I really love that about this moment too. Like, Nick is clearly important to her. You know, it's just, it's really nice that they have that kind of strong friendship that can withstand a teenage crush. You know what I mean? Not every friendship can withstand that kind of crush. And she knows exactly what's going on with Charlie, but she's still giving him a bit of space so that he can open up about that himself. Like, huge respect that in this moment she pretty much lines up this perfect opportunity for him to open up about it and then quickly moves on whenever he doesn't bite. You know, she quickly moves on to talk about something else.
I like that she doesn't kind of prompt him as well. Like, it would have been quite easy for her to have kind of gone, you know, if you have any romantic developments, if there was anyone like maybe on your team that you like, she doesn't pressure it. She kind of gives the pause for him to say and then immediately changed the subject and she's like, this is on you, this is on your terms, like yeah. I'm not gonna pressure you into this, let's go back to talking about dogs. And I love that she immediately is like, it's fine, I fancy someone else now anyway.
Oh, it's so teenage. It's so teenage. She's, it's such so a teenage good. experience.
And she's like, it's fine because I've just moved on, so you don't even have to worry about me even like fancying you anymore.
Yeah, really good.
What I really enjoy about this bit, and I know they tease as a group, tease Imogen about being an ally, but this is like great allyship. Like, I know, you know, we all suspect, but actually this is your story and we're going to do it and give you that time. That's like a beautiful way of, here it is, I'm showing you that I'm open to it. Like, I want to yeah. hear about your story, your life. And I think it goes both ways with the two of them and those developments and supporting them. But I think that allyship there of just being like, I'm going to give you the chances to tell me. Like, I don't know how many chances she lines up during this entire episode, but like, there's one yeah. after another in there. And I'm definitely. Just like, brilliant. Yes, well done. You are an ally.
Yeah.
We'll let you have the title. Like, yeah.
For sure. It's a great way. It's a great conversation almost as a role model, an example of how you can kind of skirt around the edges of it to allow opportunities for conversations to come up naturally without being overly pushy or whatever, you know, it is. It's great. Really good to watch. Should we move on to our next bit?
Yes.
Later in the episode, so true to form, Charlie decides that he's going to rejoin the rugby team so that he can spend more time with Nick. Let's have a listen.
Come in. I want to rejoin the rugby team.
You know you don't have to do this if you don't want to.
I want to. Otherwise we'll barely see each other this time. And I've missed rugby.
Have you now?
Yeah, I love running around and falling over.
Oh, well, you are very good at the falling over part.
I'm good at the running part too, actually.
What, running away from the ball?
Okay, well, if you don't want me here...
No, come on. I need you.
Oi, you come back to rugby?
Yeah.
Yes, lad. Come on, then.
You right, Nick?
What, are you still in a mood with us?
Let's go, lads. We've been playing like girls lately.
I love how welcoming Otis is to Charlie, that he's rejoined the rugby team. I thought that was really nice. That was a lovely touch.
Super lovely touch. I think it says a lot about more of the rugby team than we've really got to see. And I think that comes out later in the season, that a lot of that is what you see with teenagers, where one of them's just louder than the others. In this case, Harry is the loudest voice. and the rest of them just blur into the background a little bit. Whereas I think we get to see later on in the in season two that actually the rest of them aren't like Harry. And this is one of those first snippets that actually the rest of them aren't the same.
That's so true. That's such a great observation, actually, that in this moment, Otis isn't like Harry. He's, yeah, he's really welcoming and lovely. Actually, that's really good. I'm glad you brought that. That's definitely on point for sure.
I think it starts to kind of break down. They're not the rugby lads. Like, they are individual young people with their own individual opinions. And I think sometimes there can be the fear that if one loud person in a friendship group has an opinion, that people might not want to be part of that friendship group because they think the whole group shares that opinion. And I think we see it with throughout the season that some of their friends kind of want to start distancing themselves from Harry and kind of reaffirming as they maybe start to clock on what's going on with Nick to say, that's Harry's opinion. We have our own opinions and it is different from Harry's, and showing him that, like, again, giving Nick that space to be welcomed back.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Nick's feeling a bit of pressure, like he's putting a bit of pressure on himself to come out to like all of his friends in this really short space of time. I imagine that having a friend like Harry or an ex-friend like Harry, the school's notorious homophobic bully, just makes these things really difficult. That must be so hard for Nick to think about having to come out to the rugby lads simply because Harry exists.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's a little bit later in this episode when Charlie's mum makes comments around Nick not being the type that she would think would be gay, corrected by actually. Love the tag, by actually. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And that sort of comment is exactly the world and the conflict that some of our young people are in. It's like, I don't fit all of these spaces and this part of me, how do I be all of these things when they feel like they're very different? And I think that's a big part of what's going on for Nick, is that rugby's seen so differently. How do I also bring this other element of me into this space and it be accepted, especially when you've got a voice like Harry's that is so clearly homophobic and probably other things, but it's not necessarily demonstrated as much.
We see it even just kind of right at the end of that audio clip. Harry runs onto the field and says, you're playing like a bunch of girls lately.
It's just kind of
there's that contrast between Otis really welcoming Charlie back, Nick's friends kind of want to go and address him, and Harry interrupts and is the loudest person in the room. That I think it's hard for Nick because he wants to equally be part of this really welcoming queer friendship group, but also rugby is really important to him. And I think that's why it's so lovely that Charlie joins the team again, because he shows, he sees the value that rugby is to Nick, and he's like, well, let's not only spend time together, but let's spend time together doing something that you love as well.
For sure, for sure. We see later on in the show how big an ally Coach Singh becomes for Nick and how big a champion she is. Do you think that schools do enough to improve inclusivity in sports for all young people, let alone just queer young people?
That's a big question. Yeah, no, I think for me, there are lots of schools making lots of progress, but I think sometimes it's underpinned by the characters like Coach Singh that really champion it and are there and amplifying that. And a lot of our young people tell us that I've got a really great teacher that's pushing this forward, and then that teacher leaves and it disappears. I don't think we're necessarily where we could be for that to be embedded where it needs to be, where it's a culture of a school. But I think some schools are trying to make that happen, and I think the trying's the bit that we need to encourage, because you won't always get it right, but at least you're trying.
Oh, that's so nice. Yes, that's so true. That's definitely so true. It's about making the effort, isn't it, really?
I think it's why it's so important that when schools do want to have this approach and they do want to have Pride Days or things like that, it's championed as a whole school approach, and it's not something that's led by one either passionate ally or openly queer teacher that is done maybe during Pride Month or in LGBT History Month. It's what has the most value is when schools take an all year round whole school approach so that there is that consistency rather than a bit of a lottery of whose class you end up in. But even beyond that, it then becomes a bit of a school lottery. Like, some schools do amazing work, and we're really fortunate that some of the schools that we work with through our training program do such incredible work and really do champion creating those spaces for all young people. But it does rely on that being a specific passion of the school rather than it being a requirement elsewhere.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Should we talk about our next bit?
Yeah.
In the changing rooms after the rugby match, Charlie gives Nick the chocolate bar that he picked up earlier in the corner shop. It's their 2-month anniversary. Let's have a listen.
I got you a present.
What? Why?
Because we've been going out for 2 months.
As in, it's our 2-month anniversary.
It sounds silly when you say it like that.
No, it doesn't.
And now I'm embarrassed.
No, I did not get you a present.
It's okay, I didn't want it to become a thing, so.
It could be a thing. And how did you know this is my favourite chocolate bar?
You mentioned it ages ago, so. Thank you.
It's such a cute moment. Such a cute moment. Such a small gesture, but actually for Charlie, that was probably a really big deal. Like, we saw in the past how Ben reacted whenever he suggested that they might be boyfriends. So for him to put himself out there like this, it's like a really big thing.
Yeah, completely. And I love that the how much of a thing of Nick's, as if you want to make it a big deal, like, we'll make it a big deal. And
yes.
You know, when you're 15, 2 months is a long time to be with someone. So yeah. I love that they do make that big deal of it, and that Nick doesn't make Charlie feel silly for Charlie wanting it to be a big deal.
Yeah, you can just imagine what Ben would have said. He would have been so nasty about it. You know, you can just imagine how the conversation would have been different if it was somebody like Ben. Yeah, horrendous.
I think what I love with this bit as well, and it's kind of thing about the whole thing, is how often we see Nick and Charlie kiss.
Yes.
Just in the first 10, 15 minutes of this episode, of the first episode. Like, I grew up not seeing anyone LGBT plus kiss on screen. If there were LGBT plus relationships in TV shows, they would hug to show their affection, while their straight counterparts would kiss and would have kind of more affection on screen. So the fact that this show unapologetically shows them being physically affectionate, but also like affectionate in the way that young people are when they very first got together, and that like first exploration of figuring out where each other's boundaries are, like what is and isn't okay. It's just so refreshing to see a show unafraid to show LGBT plus people kissing on screen. That's not one kiss at the very end of the TV show or movie.
Yeah, for sure. And it's just also positive and so wholesome and so like family friendly and everything else. You know, it's just a lovely story arc. It really is nice.
What I love about when they do episodes and see like little scenes like that is that it really highlights fundamentals of a relationship. Like Charlie's paid attention to the person that they were interested in and really taken note of interest, likes, and cared enough to store that information somewhere in the back of his head, and then applied it at a moment that felt like the right time to utilize that. Like, they've just been having random conversations and chatting in open dialogue about stuff, and Charlie's like, you mentioned it, like, why wouldn't I have paid attention to you? To sort of reaffirm to Nick that he does care, like, and everything you say is important, and I want to listen to you, and I want that conversation to continue, because I don't think Nick necessarily has had that either as a teenager in that way, especially not from a lad, because we've watched him come to that realization that he likes boys. So him going on that journey at the same time is really nice to see it unfold in that way.
Oh, it is lovely. It's a really touching scene. I can't help but think, like, the cynic in me is like, oh, they've created that whole scene just so that they could charge Cadbury's a fortune to highlight their chocolate bar and a piece of shameless product placement. But I'm sure there's more to it than that. I'm sure there's more to it than that. Should we move on to our next bit?
Absolutely.
Next bit. Later on in the episode, Elle catches up with Tara and Darcy and opens up about how Tao is like the worst person to have a crush on. So let's have a listen to their advice.
Elle, listen, you deserve to have the perfect romance.
Exactly. Like us.
But Tao is literally the worst person to have a crush on. Sometimes I think he might like me back, but other times it's probably just Tao being weird.
But maybe being weird is how he expresses his romantic feelings. Personally, I can relate to that.
What if you tried actually flirting with him? Just to see what happens.
Yeah, flirt with him.
You're quiet today. What's up?
Nothing. Everything's normal.
Normal? Okay.
My mum's been moaning at me to get a haircut.
Your hair's cute, Mom. But it'd look cute short, too. You should do what you want. That's my mum. I'll see you tomorrow.
I really feel for Elle. She keeps putting herself out there. She keeps putting herself out there, and poor Tao is just so in his own head and so confused. Yeah. I feel for him.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that conversation between Tara, Darcy and Elle was so reminiscent of teenagers just being like, I really fancy this person, but I don't know what they mean. And like, yeah. Like they do it with everything, don't they? They talk about like text messages. What does this mean? How do I reply to this? What do I do? And the best part of that, have you tried actually flirting? No one knows what actually flirting is at 15. Like... Yeah. Elle was like, I have been flirting. That's what went through Elle's head in that moment. And it's like, actually, I'm going to twirl Tao's hair. Like, is that flirting? Like, it was just like, go flirt. No one knows what flirting is at that age properly. You see it on TV and it's like, how do I mimic that? Funny. Do you know what I mean? Like, that was so like non-advice. It was great. It's so teenage to just be like, yeah, just try actually flirting.
Yeah, definitely.
I also love the pure panic in poor Tao's face when Elle does actually try flirting, because I think at this point it's been like, are we friends? Are we not friends? Are we? And Tao's kind of not really had to confront it. He's very much been like, we're best pals now, we just carry on as is. And then as he's kind of confronted with Elle being a bit more physically affectionate with him, he just purely panics, because I think it's that thing of having a crush on someone is difficult enough as it is. Realizing that you have a crush on your best friend who you've known for 10 plus years is a whole different ball game. And I love the way that the show kind of shows how the two of them approach it very differently, of that, like, let's be affectionate. Now let's pull back. Now let's be affectionate again. Yeah,
definitely. Definitely. One of the things that came across to me whenever I was getting ready this afternoon for the episode was how much pressure the young people in Heartstopper are putting on themselves for everything to be perfect. Like, this whole notion of everything having to be perfect comes up quite a lot in this season. Like, here, Tara tells Elle that she deserves the perfect romance. Charlie talks about how everything has to be perfect for Nick. Tao tries to create the perfect first date. You know, they put so much pressure on themselves, and perfection doesn't really exist in real life. Like, nothing is ever perfect. You know, where do you think that comes from? Why are they putting all this pressure on themselves?
There's a whole world of pressure on a young person to be perfect in loads of different ways, and it comes from lots of different people. It's to be the perfect friend to your friends in that group, and what they think that means to them. And it's not what you think a friend is, it's how you interact with someone. Get the perfect grades, because that's what you're told that you need to for your next step of life. Your parents and guardians at home are going, you need to do this and gear up for your future, and you need to do this. This is what I've dreamed for you, sort of pressure that's from home. Like, there's always that pressure. And then all of our love stories, really, that we see in mainstream media are all this whirlwind, beautiful. They were friends. They didn't realize that they liked each other. Then they fell for each other in this weird moment. And now they're going to live happily ever after with no drama. That's what they see. That's the influences they get. So I'm not surprised that they've emphasized that pressure to be perfect.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
And that's one thing that the show does really well, particularly in this second season, is it really shows the pressures of being a young person, particularly kind of, and how that can go on to impact the young people's mental health, in the sense of you not only have all the pressures of navigating teenagehood, but also, you know, for LGBT plus young people, there's the added pressures of figuring out coming out, figuring out what that potentially might mean in terms of showing your affection. And then also trying to sit your GCSEs, which, you know, as a 15, 16-year-old, are sold to them as so life and death, and how this is your entire future that you are deciding now at, you know, picking your GCSE options. That it is, it's so, there's so much pressure put on those young people. And I think showing how that impacts the rest of their kind of friendships and things in the show is one thing they do really well, showing that Nick's got to go to study hall and so he hasn't got time to see Charlie. And, you know, there's all these pressure from their parents to make sure that they get really good grades and hand in all their coursework. And I think it's, you know, as adults, we forget how many plates that are spinning at 15, 16, you know, before you've got that emotional maturity. That I think it's a really valued way that the show kind of reminds us of, like, things can be really tough for young people, and yet they are so incredibly resilient and so incredibly joyous with all of that going on.
Yeah, definitely. That comes up again in the next moment that we're going to talk about, which was a conversation between Charlie and Tori as Charlie is getting ready for his sleepover. Let's have a listen.
Are you staying to hang out with us?
I will be going upstairs.
Mum and Dad hardly ever go away at weekends. You can invite some of your friends over.
I treasure my alone time. Why exactly did you purchase the entire Tesco snack aisle?
It's a sleepover. We need snacks. And everything about tonight needs to be perfect.
Are you getting graded for it?
I'm helping Nick come out to one of his oldest friends. Hi.
I made cupcakes.
Wow, well
Really?
done. Very
No,
proud of you.
it's very unlikely.
We have a snack table. We can put them on.
I love that Nick made cupcakes. It, like, it's so true to the comic books. It's such a nice little detail. I love in this season you get like loads of little like nuggets in the side conversations that you can barely hear. Like, it's so good.
That's why I watch everything with subtitles on, because when you have the subtitles on, you see all the little like tiny conversations that they're having. It's like
Yes.
the sound fades out, and they're just so funny.
It is. It's so good. It's so good. Again, here, Charlie talks about how everything at the sleepover has to be perfect. He's helping Nick come out to one of his oldest friends. So I guess maybe here it might be linked to the trauma that he experienced being outed, and that need to kind of control Nick's experience, just to protect him. Charlie now feels like he should protect Nick from the things that he experienced.
I love that Tori questions this kind of perfection idea as well, of when, you know, when
Definitely.
Charlie says it needs to be perfect, Tori's like, why? Like, it's not a test. You're not getting great. Like, why has it got to be perfect? And I think that is, again, because it's something that we see so often in things, is Charlie had quite a negative coming out experience that he really wants Nick to have this perfect coming out. And I think, whilst it's amazing that his coming out to his mum was fantastic, it's kind of set a bit of a precedent now that Charlie has such a care for Nick that he doesn't ever want him to have a bad coming out experience, and so has this kind of need for perfection. But I think slowly Charlie realizes that doesn't need to be the case, and that you can have a good coming out experience without it being perfect.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think what I really love about the dynamic of the siblings in this is that she's always kind of around to make sure that he's all right, and to be that challenge that he probably won't get from anyone else, because the way Tao challenges is very different, and Charlie just needs that nudge that things don't need to be perfect. You don't need that pressure. And I think the difference that we're seeing with this coming out journey is that actually you'll get really nice things for Nick having a really well-rounded coming out by the end of the season. Some of it's been horrible. Some of it's been really amazing. Some of it's been absolutely neutral in the middle. And
yeah,
that's probably a more accurate representation than Charlie's being dragged out of the closet and forced out in so many ways to everyone all at once, rather than the gradual process that people take themselves on their own journey. So yeah, it was so nice to have that challenge in there.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Speaking of coming out, in our next moment, Imogen arrives for the sleepover too, and she gives Nick another golden opportunity to come out when they talk in the kitchen. Let's have a listen.
Your friend group is so nice. How did you get to know everyone?
I guess it was Charlie first. Because me and Charlie, we're in the same form, and.
Cute!
Guys, we're ordering pizza!
Oh my god, I'm so ready for pizza!
Okay, I want ham and mushroom and stuff.
It's okay. I don't know why it's so hard to just say it.
Oh, you have to give Imogen props. She keeps lining up these opportunities for Nick. And as he says, he just can't find the words. It's hard to say. Coming out can be really hard sometimes, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that Imogen's, once again, we mentioned before, she's really being an ally. And I love that they called back to it with Darcy being like, don't worry, guys, she's an ally. which is one of my favorite lines from the first one. But she really is an ally. She really is, and the way that she's an ally as a friend of, like, she provides Nick with the space, but still doesn't apply that pressure.
Definitely. And Charlie's so touching there too, like that last comment and reassuring Nick that it's okay. And, you know, it is really nice. That's a really nice scene.
It's so lovely. But I think for me, the standout part of that scene and that moment is how accurate Nick's conversation or attempt to conversation, because you can hear it through every word that comes out of his mouth, how he's trying to say it. You can almost hear the cogs turning in his head going, I'm bisexual. And it's like, we're boyfriends. And you can almost hear the word. It's like the word comes out silently every time he goes to say something else. In those pauses. It's so exactly how a teenager would be like, I don't know how to actually say this, so I'm gonna try and hope that the word will fall out of my mouth as I continue to talk.
I love that Nick acknowledges how difficult coming out can be as well, in the sense of, like, it's not just, you know, you tell one person and you're out, and you can really hear his want to say it and his want to kind of not only do it for himself, but also for Charlie, because Nick has also got this added pressure of wanting to come out at his own pace, but also not wanting Charlie to feel like he's back in the closet like he was with Ben. And so I think that's also kind of pumping the accelerator on Nick's want to come out. But Imogen just kind of goes, yep, okay, let's go get pizza. Clearly you're not ready yet, and that's okay.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really good. Actually, how they've approached Nick's whole story arc in the first part of the show, you're right, that kind of pressure that he puts himself under, until they have a conversation about it, like Nick and Charlie have a conversation about it and decide that actually it's okay to put it off a wee bit. I can't remember what episode it comes up in before they go to France for sure. Is it the next episode, maybe? The end of the next episode?
I think it's just before Paris, because initially Nick's like, think how great it'll be. We can like kiss in front of the Eiffel Tower, and like has all these perfect ideals. And then actually they kind of go, let's not work to other people's timelines. Let's work on our time.
Yeah, for sure. And kissing on the Eiffel Tower is like cute and everything, but there are more important things in life than
they've kissed in the rain. They don't need the Eiffel Tower.
So true. So true. The next moment is a Tao and Elle moment. This made it into our top 10 moments of season 2. Tao and Elle are in the garden talking about a piece of coursework that she has to submit for her college application. Let's listen to their conversation.
It's all bad.
No, it's not. None of your art is ever bad.
Well, my coursework needs to be amazing if I'm going to use it to get into art college.
What about all this floral stuff?
Boring. It doesn't mean anything.
You just need to get inspired. I could be your model. Hmm?
Draw me like one of your French girls.
Is this supposed to be please, inspiring?
Please, Jack! Jack! Swimming! Hmm?
Okay, fine. Sit up. Wait, tilt your head a bit to your left. That's your right. No, not like that. Look at me.
Sorry.
Her L feels so rejected. I love that moment because it just captures how great friends they are and how beautiful their friendship is. Like, that is Tao and L, and there's so much chemistry between them. It's great. And then it gets all awkward and muddied and, yeah, difficult for L, that moment.
Love how big a part the sound plays in that moment as well, of like the music almost quickens.
Yes.
And sounds like a heartbeat, and the way that, you know, we see Elle's butterflies come back in and Ellen Tao's kind of sparks that fly in, and then the kind of the sound of shattering glass that
That's
you hear
it.
Of like,
yes,
never mind, let's just not. And it's such a like a they were so close.
Yeah, it was a great moment.
That for me, it's what they've done really well with this friendship to romance story, which we see so often, is that actually they don't lose the friendship in that.
Yeah,
they don't.
So
it doesn't. They don't transition from friends to relationship, and all of a sudden it's all about the relationship. That friendship's still so fundamental, and that's what's key to it. And it's like, I like you because you're you. Like when they Tao does the perfect date, and it's like, yeah, but that's not why we work. Like, we work because we're good mates. That's what I want. With some more bits, do you know what I mean? And I think it's so, this clip for me starts that journey of rooting for them to get past the confusion of it all, of being teenage friends that fancy each other.
Yeah, definitely.
I think one thing that's so refreshing to see, particularly for a character like Elle to go through this storyline, is at no point is Elle being trans coming into Tao's identity. Tao's panic isn't because he maybe has feelings for his friend who he's previously known as a guy and is now a girl. Like, that is not part of their story. Tao's panic is because he likes his friend who is a girl and is a very pretty girl, and he's having that panic because now he sees her as that. It never becomes a question of what does that mean for Tao's sexuality. Like, he still refers to himself as a straight friend, and it really reinforces the way that Elle is perceived in the group. It's so refreshing, because I think so often with trans storylines and trans characters, their identity of being trans becomes what the story's about. And actually for Elle, and for a lot of our young people, it is a very small part of their identity. And actually they are so much more of a multifaceted young person, but that is often the bit that gets focused on.
Definitely. It would be so easy for them to fall into that trap, because it would be very easy to create drama around and to really build into like a big dramatic story arc. And you're right, it is. It's really great that they haven't done that here. It's just a joy to watch. It really is. I've got issues with the whole date thing, because it's just totally ridiculous. But but that's just a personal thing. Don't hate me, Heartstopper fans.
They also don't shy away from Elle being trans as well. They're like,
that's
I think
right.
That is what makes it particularly refreshing, is they don't, it's not that they've cast a trans actress to play a cis character. Elle is authentically trans and has trans experiences of moving schools and things like that.
Yeah.
It's just not a core central part of her storyline. It's just a part of her life. And I think that is something that we see how that plays a part in her life through her art and the story she tells and the people she meets later on down the line. I think that is what is so refreshing, is that so often in media, trans young people's stories are this like heartbreaking tale or how difficult things is. And it is, but also there is so much joy in those groups. And, you know, seeing it in our youth groups when they get to do, I was lucky enough to see one of our youth groups do some craft activities the other day. And just there was so much joy in that room, seeing them draw frogs and sharks and just being around their pals, that I love that the show represents that element of queer and trans joy.
Oh, that's so nice. Yeah, that's so nice. Should we move on to our next bit?
Yeah, absolutely.
Finally, Nick gets around to coming out to Imogen. The final coming out moment is when Imogen needs to pop to the loo. It's another perfect opportunity for Nick to have a go at coming out and telling her about him and Charlie. Let's have a listen.
Imogen, I kind of had something that I want to tell you. What? It's kind of hard to...
Is it about you and Charlie? Oh my God. I should have let you say it. It's just... It is kind of obvious. And like, it totally makes sense. Like the whole date thing and the sports day thing. You didn't like me because you're gay.
Well, I'm bisexual, actually.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't actually know how to react.
This is good.
I love that they built that into Imogen's and Nick's moment here, the fact that she doesn't know how to react, because it just feels so true and honest to how a lot of people feel whenever people come out to them, especially young people.
I love Imogen. I think she's such a funny character. And I love that she's consistently just given Nick this space. She's allowed him his time.
Yeah.
And just as Nick is about to come out, she can't help herself. And I think that is so true to the character we see.
Yeah,
but then also that contrast of like, she's known the whole time, and even though she's known, she still doesn't know how to react. And I think that's the fact that she apologizes for not knowing how to react as well is such a lovely thing. But Nick reassures her of like, this is good, this is great, like thank you for just being there.
It is, it's a lovely moment.
I think that's exactly what people want, is they don't necessarily want you to have a big spiel. They don't want you to give a big thing. Sometimes they're just like, cool, I still care about you. Give me a cuddle. Like that's exactly what their friendship would have done. Like you would have celebrated any other moment in that way of like, here's a hug to be like, yes, amazing. That's exactly what it should have been. And it was just so nice for it to be like that. So yeah.
Yeah,
beautiful moment, even if Imogen did the coming out for Nick.
I know they built up to it the whole episode. We got these little teasers, and finally it happened. It was really good. It was a joy to watch. Are there any other tips you would have for people who about responding whenever somebody comes out to them, be it educators or young people with their friends or family members?
Big question for me. It's always about listening to their coming out. What does that look like? For educators, it's almost a thank you can go a long way of thanks for trusting me with that information, and then clarifying where they're at. So a lot of our young people might have shared that with you but aren't sharing it with everyone yet. So like, thank you for trusting me with this information. Like, are other people know? Do you want me to just keep it to myself? What do you want me to do? Like, where are you at? And that clarification can go a long way for a young person to know that actually you were the right person to trust with that really vital information about them, so they know you're not going to do anything that they wouldn't want to do with that information.
I think one thing that it does really well, and obviously showing that Imogen already knows what's going on.
Yeah.
She doesn't take that moment away from Nick either. Because I think sometimes people, young people might really build them up to coming out to a parent, a friend, or family member. And the moment is almost sometimes taken away by them going, oh, it's fine, I already know. Like it,
yes.
It can often people can say that in the thing of like, oh, you don't have to worry, like I'm already well aware. Mm. But that can take away from that moment for that young person. I think what Imogen does so well is that she goes, oh, it's really obvious, but then still gives him that hug and shows him like, thank you for trusting me with that. This is a big deal. And I really, she shows the value she sees in it rather than going like a, oh, if this is about you and Charlie, like I already know that you're gay. Like she gives him still that space.
Definitely, definitely. After everyone leaves, I think it's the same day, Charlie gets some breakfast and decides that this is the right time to tell his mom and dad about him and Nick too. Let's have a listen to how that goes.
You know my friend Nick?
Yes.
I thought I probably should tell you. He's my boyfriend. You're surprised.
Oh, well, he's a very sporty, sort of laddish sort of boy. I wouldn't have assumed he was gay.
Being gay has nothing to do with that. And actually, he's bisexual.
Gay or bisexual, Nick is banned from sleepovers from now on.
What?
Yeah, there will be no hanky-panky in this house.
Please don't say hanky-panky. And I suppose Nick's going on this Paris trip as well?
Yeah.
So that's why you've been talking about it non-stop for weeks.
Bedroom door open at all times.
I'm leaving.
No hanky-panky till you're married.
Stop saying hanky-panky.
It's funny. It's great to see the return of Julio, Charlie's dad, and he adds such a nice little comedy moment to lighten the situation. You know, this conversation that Charlie's having with his mum and dad that isn't really going very well. I kind of feel a bit sorry for Charlie's mum, even though, like, she is being a little homophobic. She does try and just puts her foot in it. She just says the wrong thing, but I don't think that it's malicious in any way. I think she genuinely has their best interest at heart.
I think that's exactly it. And we remind young people that coming out and people's view changing is a journey for everyone involved. And while you're coming out and you're going on that journey and that's really personal, your parents, your guardians, the other members of your family that have all seen you a certain way or built a vision of your life for you, because that's what everyone does. They hope for the best for you, they dream for you and want the best. All of that has to change. So it takes some time for them to unpick that and sort of come back and go, okay, this changes. How do I do that? Learn how to talk about it. The language changes. I think parents go on a big journey when a young person comes out, and it's a journey for them. And young people forget that sometimes. And it can be hard for parents to remind their young person that they're trying to support, that they're trying to learn and grow and support them at the same time.
It's a journey for everyone involved. And
for sure,
I like that the show kind of doesn't really shy away from the fact that not all parents have all the answers. And I think that is a really great thing, that like it shows that Charlie's mum doesn't necessarily know how to handle Charlie having a boyfriend, even though she's had a lot longer to know about Charlie being gay than Nick's mum did. And it's so, I think a lot of the parents that we speak to are absolutely fine with their young person's identity, but they've maybe grown up knowing nothing about the LGBT plus community or know nothing about how to support those young people. And that's why we have services like Proud Connections, which is our live chat service, because it's there for young people who can go on and chat about their identity. But it's also there for the adults that support those young people to go on and say, my child has come out to me as this, they have a partner, and I have no idea how to support them. And it allows the parents to be part of and to go on that journey with that young people and allow the conversation to grow as they do.
Oh, that's so true. That's so true. And it's great that those services exist and that parents are made to feel a part of the community just as much as the young people.
Can we just talk about the use of hanky panky for 1 second? Like, that is exactly how you would imagine parents approaching the conversation of, like, that's such a typical conversation, LGBT or not. I don't want your partner behind a closed door in your bedroom. No hanky panky in my house. Like, before my coming out, I got that message. After my coming out, I got that message. That was not, it's there was so no funny. Difference in it. But, and I think that awkwardness around it and Tori being like, please stop using that word. Like, please, that's not how we have this conversation. It's so real. And it ties into Molly being like, how do we have these conversations? That was a very normal conversation for everyone to be having. But parents are just a little bit awkward. Teenagers don't want to have that conversation. And it's so beautifully represented. I was just like, brilliant.
Yeah, it was great.
Golden.
It was great television for sure.
It's also so funny if, like, particularly for parents of LGBT plus young people, because you then enter that thing of, as a parent, of like, is this just a friend? Is this not a friend? Yeah. And like previously, you know, before they knew that they were together, Nick was allowed for sleepovers, no problem. There was no questioning about, like, whether or not they had the door open. And it's like this distinct shift in the nature of that. And I think that's something that a lot of parents of LGBT plus young people have, like, wait, so how do I know which of their friends they're dating and which of their friends are just their friends without asking them and making them super uncomfy at the same time?
Yeah, for sure.
And I like that it was awkwardly uncomfortably handled, but also hilarious at the same time, with Tori being like, we can talk about this, but can we use a different word?
Tori's great. I really like Tori. She's definitely up there in my top three characters, I think, maybe top four. For sure. Should we talk about our last bit? Our last bit is the Tori moment as well, with Tori and Charlie, that kind of rounds out this episode. Tori goes to see Charlie after that conversations with their parents, just to check in with them about them now being ready to come out as a couple and to start telling people about their relationship. Let's have a listen to their conversation.
You're telling people then?
Yeah.
And you're not worried?
About what?
About getting bullied again?
It's not going to be like when I got outed. We just want people to know we're together. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure Nick doesn't have to deal with what I did. I can protect him. I can make sure that he never feels pressured, stressed, scared. Everything's going to be perfect.
It's a really great scene with Tori and Charlie. I love how, as you said earlier, Liam, that Tori's just there to check in with them to make sure that things are okay. But I can't help but feel quite worried for Charlie, that he's taking so much on and wanting to protect Nick from things that really nobody can protect Nick from. Homophobes are going to exist. Negative experiences happen. Life isn't perfect. You know, I feel quite worried for him.
There's so much pressure.
That's something that a lot of, particularly with young people, when they're, if they're in a relationship where one of the young people is out and one of the young people isn't, there is sometimes then that pressure of the one that is out to guide the young person that's coming out and to guide their partner, to help them come out. And actually, coming out looks different for every single person and looks different to whoever they come out to as well. I think the fact that the episode ends with Charlie saying everything's going to be perfect, even without reading the rest of the comments, you kind of go, well, that's going to be a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it? Because now it's not going to be perfect, because nothing is perfect when you're 15, no relationship, no experience. But I think it's such a great moment. And I think it's hard to forget that Tori isn't that much older than Charlie. She's the same age as Nick.
That's it.
They're in the same school year, and she feels so much older because she goes through her own stuff. She has her own mental health things, as we see in kind of her book. But she's always there just to check in with Charlie, just to not apply the pressure, but to recognize that, to give him that space to say, like, if things aren't okay, I'm here. But also, you don't have to talk about it if you don't want to.
Yeah, I think for me, Tori, it's always that person that you low key know that you don't want to mess with. Like, it's like, do not cross me. Like, I know I keep myself to myself and I sip on my juice in the corner, but like, there's a time and a place and we'll sort it out. And you see it later on this season, like
So
when it
good.
needs to come out, it's like a beautiful moment and you're like, here you go. But it's always so subtle and caring when it's with Charlie and her just on their own. It's all just like, if you want to chat, it is fine. I know what you've been through. And you could see it on a face in that episode, that pure concern, but that's not what came out. Like, you could see that she was concerned and there was nerves and worry and
Oh,
anxiety around it,
definitely.
but that's not what came out of her mouth to Charlie. It was care and support and I've got you if you need it, you know where to find me sort of message was what came out. And that's a really hard thing for someone of that age to be able to do. But yeah, it was their relationship so beautiful as a sibling dynamic.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. I do love Tori. She's great. Really good. That rounds off episode one of season two. Thanks so much for coming on our deep dive. Molly and Liam, what were your highlights of season two? I know you've both watched the full season, so what were your highlights?
I think mine was Isaac this season. I think
Yes.
Isaac and Imogen, considering they are characters we don't know, and I think maybe that might be why I find their stories so exciting, because I've read the comics, so I know what's happening for everyone else. They are complete unknowns, but I love the journey, then the growth that we see in Imogen from the person she is at the start of season one to the end of season two, and some potential implications that Imogen might be going on her own journey. But also the way that asexuality is explored through Isaac this season is something that I've not seen that exploration of that identity anywhere else, and not in such a small and nuanced way without shying away from being explicitly an asexuality
Yeah, it's
storyline.
great.
I think that those two are my absolute highlight.
Me and Molly proved that we could talk about our favorite moments from Heartstopper for hours the other lunchtime when we sat and did it. I've got two. I think Isaac's exploration of asexuality, brilliant. From a book to seeing it in a display and hearing it from someone else and then diving more into it, beautifully done. My standout has to be Nick reminding Charlie that he was there when he gave them the hickey. When Charlie's like, what if they think you gave me the hickey? And she's like, you know it was me, right? Like,
It's
like
funny.
that's okay if they think that, because actually was me. And it was just like, I don't know what it is. It was just that moment. I know it was just like, I can see it playing in my head and it's beautiful.
Oh, for sure. I think for me, like, I loved Isaac's story arc. I really love Tao and Nick getting closer, becoming closer, and becoming better friends. I love getting a bit of insight into Tao's past with his mom and Emma's dad and things like that. There's just so much to love about season two. What are your hopes and dreams for season three? I know it feels like it's so far away, but it'll be here in next to no time at some stage next year, hopefully. What are your hopes and dreams for the characters in season three?
I want to see the end of Imogen's All Too Well of I'm a passionate ally to I actually maybe am a little bit queer storyline, which is something that I suspected it a little bit with when we see a lot of the parallels between how Imogen looks at Nick after sports day to how Nick looks at like Tara and Darcy at the party. And I think the introduction of Sahara as a character and the little tiny bits of sparks that we see between Imogen and Sahara at the end, and how, there's so many ways that they could go down that, of that, like, thinking that you're straight and actually maybe she comes turns out that she's a lesbian, maybe she's bisexual. I think that exploration potentially for Imogen, I would love to see that.
For sure. I'm kind of on the fence about that story arc, because like, strong female friends that are straight, like strong straight female friends have always been such a huge part of my community. Like, I have the strongest straight allies. And I would love for Nick to have that too. But I get where other people come from, where they see this potential story arc for Imogen, and it is really like, it does seem pretty exciting. So yeah, I'm kind of on the fence. I'm kind of on the fence.
See, I would love to see some nothing but straight ally, hotness in multiple ways. I think we're going to get a little bit more from the rugby team. I think that I'm hoping for a little bit more of we're going to be more inclusive and really like upfront with that inclusivity rather than it being like, I'm going to tell you it's okay, but I'm not going to confront Harry. Like, they're not the same thing. I want them to go on that journey for themselves. I think that would be a really interesting thing to see. Teachers, beautiful. That moment of like, well, I didn't get any of that. I want to see some more of that developing relationships. But for me, how they've dived into mental health and started some of that journey, because I was proper concerned about how you're going to heart stopper a fight, such dark themes as such. They've done it so well. I'm really intrigued to see how they explore that through the relationships of the different characters in that. So like Nick and Tal not knowing fully how the impact on Charlie and how they'll explore it in very different ways and sort of support each other to support Charlie, who they both care about, that sort of stuff. So I'm very intrigued to see how they explore that further.
That was a really nice moment, actually, as they got ready for prom, when Tao and Nick kind of bonded on the stage and had that conversation. That was really, I think that made it into our top 10 moments too. But yeah, anyway, thank you so much, Molly and Liam, for coming on and sharing this experience with us and sharing in our Heartstopper Season 2, Episode 1 deep dive. Did you enjoy yourselves?
Yep, absolutely loved it.
Good.
It is one of my favorite things to talk about.
So good. The show absolutely would not exist without partners like the Proud Trust. So thank you so much for your support and for coming on and sharing your thoughts with us. Thank you, listeners, for sticking with us. If you're still with us right to the end, you really are hardcore fans. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button, leave us a 5-star review, and follow us on Instagram. And there isn't really anything else to say apart from goodbye. So should we say goodbye to listeners?
Bye.
Today's show was produced by Shut Up World and featured me, Jamie Wilson, and special guests Molly and Liam from The Proud Trust. Copywritten material within this episode is made available to provide criticism, comment, or review, and to advance the understanding of issues which impact the queer community. For more information, please see our Fair Use and Fair Dealing statement at www.properfullongaypodcast.com.